Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Oh, my dear friends, I'm so glad you're with us today. I'm Roberta Grimes. This is Seek Reality, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Most of us, you know, wish we could fly. We have fantasies about flying, dreams about flying, and all while knowing that we don't have wings, so we assume we're grounded. However, nothing could be further from the truth. What far too few people know is that in fact, every one of us flies out of body in the greater reality beyond this universe most nights while our bodies are sleeping. Our minds never need to sleep, so they play. And as we've said on Seek Reality episodes that dealt with the nature of reality, this material universe makes up less than 5% of what even mainstream scientists know exists. Most of reality is what we have come to call the greater reality, which includes the afterlife. But most of the greater reality is this apparently truly suspendous and gigantic astral realm. That's where near-death experiences happen. It's where you and I go while these material bodies sleep so we can meet with our dead loved ones, meet with our guides, take classes, explore, and simply play. I mean, it's not all pleasant there, and we're going to find out a lot more about that today. But for the most part, the fun to be had there is beyond our ability even to comprehend it from here. So we're all astral travelers, but we have little or no memory of these excursions that occur so frequently for all of us. But there are a few people who have learned to travel out of their bodies at will while they're awake, and that's an object of, frankly, a fascination for me. The modern pioneer in the field of aware out-of-body travel was Robert Monroe in his wonderful trilogy, The Journeys Out of the Body, Far Journeys, and Ultimate Journey, is the classic gold standard in this field. But for people to learn to travel out of bodies is amazingly becoming a lot more common. And one of my very favorite afterlife researchers is a fearless young man who has been interested in the afterlife and the greater reality for most of his surprisingly short life. And among other things, he is an expert astral traveler. Cyrus Kirkpatrick is the author of The Afterlife and Beyond, An Examination of Life After Death by an Out-of-Body Explorer. His earlier book was Understanding Life After Death, and I think there's one other as well. We can ask him that. And he has written numerous other books related to travel and careers. His early interest in parapsychology and the supernatural has led to what I think is going to be a lifelong pursuit of knowledge and truth in this field. Cyrus's current base is in Los Angeles, but he travels the world and he writes from everywhere, and he often takes out-of-body excursions and shares them with his very large tribe. This is his fourth appearance on Seek Reality, and having him with us is always, as you'll see, a complete delight. Welcome, Cyrus. I'm so glad you could be with us today.
Hey, Roberta. Nice to talk to you again.
Now, we have to start by saying where you are, Cyrus. Tell us a little bit about where you are.
So actually, at the moment, I am in Japan, so I'm actually in a hostel, and I'm freezing my butt off. You may hear some people walking by or talking because it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and a couple people just came in. I think it'll be fine. I'm trying not to wake people up who are in some of the rooms. So I might not speak as loudly as I usually do. If I can be a little bit more hushed, then I will try that. But yeah, I'm in Osaka, Japan at this moment.
Well, that's beautiful. And 6 o'clock in the morning, where I am now, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So that just shows you what a really small world this is, everyone. Wherever you are, Cyrus, we're thrilled to be talking to you. And I have to say, this new book is terrific. It's terrific. What I love about it is you basically researched everything and you're giving us details and your honest opinion. And frankly, I think a very mature and reasoned opinion about so many things that I never write about. And I don't see anybody else really writing about. So I have to recommend your book enthusiastically. It's called The Afterlife and Beyond, An Examination of Life After Death by an Out-of-Body Explorer. Now, we're going to talk mostly about the book, but many people don't understand traveling out of the body. Maybe you could just briefly tell us, once again, because you've said this before, what got you started on this? And can you tell us a little about going out of body?
I mean, what got me started was the fact that before I began having my out-of-body experiences, well, before I began having a lot of them, I was already involved in this field. I have probably lots of writings on the internet, on different forums, dating back easily the last maybe 15 years. And then that led to what basically began happening in, I suppose, early 2014 is that I started having out-of-body experiences, and this is when I was living in Los Angeles. So a lot of people have, like, lucid dreaming, and lucid dreaming is kind of like a step before having an, I guess we would say, an astral experience. So I talk about this a lot in my videos. I have a YouTube channel, and I do a lot of lectures about the differences between lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences. But it's kind of like your brain is interpreting information that's coming in these other dimensions the best that it can. And it's not until you really feel a disconnection happen with your body, like you feel like an electrical surge almost, and you're sometimes, you know, almost quite physically moving out of your body, that you know that you're actually on that side having a more unfiltered experience, I guess you could say. So I'm because of my background, I knew what was happening, and so I began investigating it from a logical angle in an attempt to get information from people I was meeting in this in these environments, and to be able to, in a sense, operate as a journalist or a reporter and piece together information about where I was and what was happening. So a lot of people do these types of experiences and they don't even know it, or they keep it a secret. It's not that rare. It's not common, but it definitely happens. You know, people can have these experiences. And so that got the ball rolling to really begin pushing out a lot of work, afterlife topics, the Facebook group, the books, all that good stuff.
Well, so it sort of started naturally for you then, is what you're saying. You didn't have to cultivate it much. You sort of understood it, and it started to happen.
Well, you know, it's a bit weird because I almost, you know, I wouldn't be able, I can't quite say what it is that kicked it all off. It just, you know, something kicked in, and, you know, I'm not so sure what sparked it, except maybe it was just kind of clearing a mental block. Maybe I had some type of fear holding me back from having a full experience, and then at some point as I got older that finally went away. It's tough to say, but I just know that at one point most of the time going to sleep at night or taking a nap wouldn't result in anything paranormal happening, and then at a certain point later on suddenly I was going to sleep and paranormal stuff was happening.
Wow. So one of the things you describe in your book is when you first started to go out of body, there's your body sleeping, you're in this body that's not that body, and you were figuring out its properties. Can you tell us the properties of that astral body just quickly? What is the astral body like? We all have one.
Well, it's a good question because not a lot of people, I guess, go into this subject. A lot of people just dismiss it, or they say, you know, when we die, we become formless orbs of light that just float around. You know, this is the, you know, commonly we hear this from different mediums. I think what happens is there's just kind of a confusion going on because I kind of say, like, you know, if we look at the universe kind of like data, we can say all the data, all the information about your body as you exist right now, the universe just kind of does a copy and paste job. So, you know, it copies all that data and then it pastes it on to that side. So in a sense, your astral body is, you know, very, very similar to the body you have now, because it's all that data just copied on over to that side. So, I mean, it's possible to be out of your body and not know you're out of your body because it's like you're still in a body. But of course, the thing is that then the rules are all different. So, you know, so people who are very skilled at doing out of body types of things, you know, they can go out of their body, you know, be in an astral body, which is, as I said, still like their body, and then shapeshift into whatever they want to look like and, you know, become that orb of light and fly around and then, go back into their body again. But, you know, typically when I'm astral projecting into like a solid environment, people aren't doing that so much. You know, frankly, I think out-of-body travelers here, and I wouldn't even include myself in that bunch. You know, some people are really skilled. I think they often have more skill than the average dead person does on that side because they've mastered how to be in both worlds and be able to like become anything they want and almost like go anywhere they want. And whereas a lot of, you know, people you meet who are on that side living their lives in, you know, the afterlife, oftentimes they haven't even reached that point yet. So we have to keep in mind that, you know, the different skill levels, I guess, that people have.
But this body that you are in when you're out of body, this sort of basic Cyrus astral body is solid. It looks like you, and you centered your fingers and discovered it would produce saliva and it had taste, right?
Yeah, I mean, initially I did a lot of that type of stuff because, I mean, I would appear in basically this astral home. It's a replica of an old family home. And so, you know, I'd eat things or initiate coughing spasms by like eating salt or, you know, just a lot of stuff like that just to test, you know, the waters, right?
Yes.
And I really didn't find many like major differences, except, you know, there's been a few peculiarities. Like I noticed that if I stuck my hand on a hot burner, like I wouldn't feel the pain, but I would feel the pain if I pinched myself. So like maybe there's some kind of a cutoff point. I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff like that you
yes.
know, I haven't quite wrapped my mind around. But for the most part, there's plenty of similarities that allow people to kind of, you know, sometimes not even fully understand that there's been any kind of major change until they start to look at the details of, you know, how the physics operates on, you know, what we would call an astral or fourth density, to use that terminology level. So, I mean, certainly it's, like, I don't usually use the term non-physical. I know a lot of people do that because I have a different perspective about all of this. I mean, what is physical? What is non-physical?
Yes.
I mean, we know it's all energy. You know, even in this plane, it's
right.
still just energy. Then that energy, we could say it's information and data. So to be non-physical would mean that there's no information and data. Well, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
So, I mean, it just all kind of breaks. You know, the more I, you know, the more I began having those experiences, it just became more and more difficult to relate to some of the like the mainstream kind of new age material, I guess. But some of it's spot on accurate, but some of it's like, I don't know, I have more difficulty.
Feel the same way. That's what I love what you do, because you figure it all out yourself. You don't trust in other people's interpretations, some of which I agree are very superficial. But one of the things I really enjoyed about this book is you talk in detail about the sort of near astral where you can go, and it's just like there's every city has an astral mimic. You said some of them are a lot nicer than the city here, and even our rooms. And I've seen this from other astral travelers. They say, well, it looked like my room, but it was different in key ways. Can you talk a little about that? What is this near astral where you go and you meet with people and have basically adventures?
Yeah, well, what's going on is that basically the entire planet has, you know, one level up, and as many levels is the astral version of this planet. So really it is this planet. So it's not like a different planet. It's like a different wavelength of the same planet we're on. And so everything just kind of corresponds to it. Now my belief is, you know, many of the afterlife experiences we see, I mean, that we hear about, even like you know, if like a medium is talking to somebody who's deceased, I think personally 90% of the time it's people living on that replica. It's just difficult, I think, for them to properly explain it. For example, I mean, it's weird to say, like, where, you know, you've crossed over. Where are you now? It's like, well, I'm in, you know, I'm in Kentucky.
Yeah.
It's like, that doesn't make any sense. But you find out, okay, well, maybe Astle, Kentucky, maybe there's like golden temples and things there, which, you know, you wouldn't, you know, we would never imagine here. But then if you actually look down on, you know, on the astral map, it's like, well, this is actually in the geographic radius of what we would think of as Kentucky. And I mean, I'm not saying Kentucky is like that. I mean, I've had experiences in like astral Los Angeles, astral Tucson, Arizona, and found that these are different cities on that side, different characteristics, but kind of corresponds geographically. So like a neighborhood might be the same neighborhood on that side. But, you know, there will be differences. So, you know, including even one's own house. In fact, like your house on that side might even have different people living in it. And so I know Jürgen Zeeway, he's a much, much more skilled out-of-body guy than I am. And he writes in his books that, you know, he'd go out of body and find literally like other people living in his home. But he found out that it's such a communal atmosphere that it's not such a big deal because, I mean, you don't exactly have to lock your doors when you're in another dimension.
No, but it's interesting to me that there is so much complexity. And I agree with you that many people spend quite a bit of time out of the technical sort of afterlife area, which we are told by people who we used to think were dead that death is always a one-way trip. People who are traveling out of body and come back haven't really gone to that ultimate afterlife. But that doesn't matter because the astral is so full of afterlife mimic places, and that's where our dead loved ones come and meet with us. And I've even, you probably have too, heard stories about people who made a place where they could meet with their loved ones, and the loved ones appeared and they got to hug, and it was all very real and wonderful. But it's much more complicated, Cyrus, than I ever really imagined, and I found that in your book. It's very complicated, and it's not all fun. You talked about some very unpleasant people and situations, which you seem to be attracted to. It's like interesting to you to study what's not so enjoyable.
Well, let me back up a little bit. So, you know, in terms of what is the astral, is that actually an afterlife experience? Okay, so there is a school of thought that will make the argument, oh, Cyrus, you're not really having experiences on the other side because not until you're really, really, really dead. So I would definitely recommend reading Jürgen's books, you know, to clarify that, because, I mean, Jürgen has been to literally the same places you'll see somebody having a near-death experience go to. Akashic records and, you know,
yes,
you know, astral citadels of made of crystal, blah, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just that the fact is there's a lot of different levels. I kind of disagree that somebody has to like 100% be dead to be on that side, because, you know, we're multidimensional in characteristics, but you do have to be dead to have the full conscious awareness. Otherwise, you're always, I think, battling, you know, having your consciousness split between two different places.
We'll talk about that too, because you talk about that in your book. Mm-hmm. But no, you're exactly right, I think. Near-death experiencers, Jürgen Zeeva, a lot of people have these extraordinary, rich experiences populated by people that are dead, or, you know, that actually are not dead, but we would have thought of as dead. And the reason I think that the dead want to make sure that we understand that out of, and you say the same thing in your book, so we can't say out-of-body experiences all go to the place where the dead go, simply because a lot of their experiences are full of religious symbols and religious ideas. And we are told that in the actual afterlife, there isn't any religion practiced. So I think that they want to distinguish what is extraordinary, these out-of-body experiences, from the, you know, sort of, well, now we're really dead. And as you point out, it becomes a very rich life when people's primary consciousness awareness is it where the dead are. Another thing that's interesting too, I should just tell you, most of the study I did of people who are dead and communicating was from before 1920. You know, there's never ever a description that I've ever found in all of that literature of a tunnel and a light. and they don't even stress the light. It's a very different experience. After we started getting near-death experiences, for some reason, I think the tunnel, frankly, is a rescue device for people who are unexpectedly out of their bodies, but that's neither here nor there. But it's quite different. Do you think that too?
Yeah, I do think that. I don't mean to interrupt. I just you've touched on, I think, you know, I think I mentioned this a bit in the book, but this is one of the major kind of weird mystery things because, you know, like, yeah, historically, all the spirit communication that is very, very, very well documented, they don't talk about that. And I mean, I've really concluded that, you know, when we're having that spirit communication, they're coming from these same places that I've been to.
Yes.
You know, so I have interviewed people on the other side trying to get to the bottom of this. Like, I've talked to my father about this. My father passed away like 6 months ago. And I've talked to him about this, trying to, you know, and other people as well. And it's like the people I talk to living on this astral side, they recount their death experience, and it's like they're recounting, like, when we hear somebody talking about a near-death experience, like, I met with Jesus and all this stuff happened to me.
Yes.
And that they get very emotional about it, but somehow, between that experience when they died, suddenly they're in this particular state of existence. So, like, it's like, it's, yeah, almost like, it's almost like when they died, they had like this like psychedelic voyage trip thing, but at a certain point it's like the smoke cleared, and then they're, you know, also in this like other second earthly spirit, you know, astral, yes, spirit world environment. But it's almost like some people don't even know how they got there, or they don't have full memory of exactly what happened when they did die. It's really complicated. It's really confusing. But yeah, a lot of people won't mention, or they won't have memory of like a tunnel and a light and all that kind of stuff. Or if they did, they just, it's just not in their the top of their mind anymore. So,
yes,
you know, so, because some people think that when we die, literally people think this because of all the, you know, years of kind of near-death literature, that they think that the afterlife is the light, so that when you die,
yes,
you're literally floating in like this kind of soup of light for forever and ever and ever. And they,
yes,
don't know that there is, like, the afterlife might be like sitting on your astral couch eating astral Cheetos, even though, and of course, it's not, no one's stuck to that existence because, you know, there's higher levels. We can go into like the more complex territory where it becomes like really, really pristine and,
yes,
otherworldly. And like, you know, maybe we all have like light bodies and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, I mean, that's just, this is the kind of stuff that we go into way later. And, you know, frankly, you know, when you're communicating with spirit people, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not anyone's priority to get to that point as quickly as possible. So it's not, you know, I don't know where I'm going with that, but yeah, I mean, I think you were saying something else. I might have cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, that's no problem. You're the one we really want to hear from. But I think that it's important in my particular journey to make sure people understand, when you say the same thing in your book, that these people are having wonderful experiences and evidential in some ways, but the it's primarily seems to be pulled from their minds because they're going back. Nobody wants to confuse them. And as a result, it's not really like what it is when people, when it's a one-way trip for people. But what do you conclude about the big word, time? Because you talk about time. I've been interested in time and have been doing some research on time. And you have some really strong opinions about it. So talk about time in the eternal sense.
Well, you know, I mean, practically speaking, if we were to look at existence as really being dominated by linear time, then we would be, you know, basically dooming ourselves to these really bad existential crises, because how can you imagine existence as you like 10 billion years from now? Like, you know,
yes,
it wouldn't even be possible to comprehend that. So as it turns out, on these astral levels, there's all these abilities that it's very difficult for us to perceive, even though, okay, the astral level, like, there can be an astral McDonald's. I'm just making this up, you know, and
is there really one, though? Is there an Astro McDonald's?
I think for fun, people do that kind of stuff. Like I got the vibe from those types of places, and it's like, wouldn't it be funny if, you know, we open a McDonald's? So yeah, I mean, you know. But right. But the point is it can just look really normal. Like, you can take a photo of a neighborhood in the spirit world, and it looks like a neighborhood. But in reality, there's stuff going on that's really outside of our comprehension a little bit.
Yes.
One element of that involves what appears to be kind of an ability to travel in time, almost like it's like, you know, like a skill set. So you were doing something, you were at a party that was a lot of fun 2 weeks ago, and you're like, I want to go back there. It might be possible to just stick your consciousness back into where you were 2 weeks ago, and you're back doing that again, and then you go back to where you were previously. So now all the rules about, you know, past, present, future are all mixed up. And
yes.
And so it's you know, it's a really weird one. It's difficult to wrap one's mind around that. You know, as well as the possibility that you can be in multiple places at once. This is something as well that I've been told that, you know, people learn how to do. So with time, we kind of have to look at it like a tapestry. So it's almost like you can move around in these different directions as opposed to it being on a linear path. But it can still feel like a linear path if that's kind of what we want. But at the same time, you know, it's not bound to that. And if you're not, you know, if you have crystal clear memory, like 10 billion years ago could have been yesterday, or, you know, it could have been 10 billion years ago, it could have been 24 hours ago. So it's really difficult, you know, it's really difficult to put those strong divisions. And I think that's what spirits are trying to say when there's no time. But it's really, you know, it doesn't mean like it's just this big chaotic jumble. I think that might be maybe what I mentioned in the book. And I hope not, because that would really suck, frankly, if time was just all just crammed together. But no one seems to think that on that side.
No,
and if, you know,
it makes sense to them. That's, I guess, what we have to take for comfort. They aren't bothered by it. So whatever they're living in works for them. But it does seem to be kind of optional. People who are trying to stay in close touch with the Earth will be on Earth time. But they tell us they don't have to be. They can. Now here's another thing, Cyrus, that blows my mind. Those at the higher levels tell us that all of our lifetimes are all happening at the same time, and they're influencing one another, which is why the people who do past life regressions can also do future life progressions. And the past life or the future life could be influencing our time today, this lifetime today, which boggles my mind. But
well, here's a way to look at that, because we're going to multiverse or multidimensional theory. So like anytime you're making a decision, then there's a whole spectrum of things that could happen if you follow that path. Then if you make a different decision, then it's created a different future timeline. So now you have basically like almost near infinite different future timelines that could be continually being created. And so I think on these higher levels, it's possible to kind of zoom ahead and explore these different timelines as they've already been like set up, just based on so much as a decision. So now we're looking at, you know, advanced levels of consciousness, where frankly, if you're on the astral side and you ask somebody working at the astral McDonald's about this, like they'll have no idea what you're talking about. And it'll be like, you know, it'll be like you're talking about like paranormal, you know, out there material, you know, for them. So
Yes. One thing I think that's important to say is that when we are here, we really are in a very small percentage of our whole vast eternal minds. Mikey Morgan's mother was on with us a few weeks ago, and Mikey Morgan is a sixth-level being who just took a brief Earth lifetime. And so he could talk to us like a regular 20-year-old kid, which is how old he was when he died. And one of the points that he makes is that there's no Where's I going with this? I started with something important, and it was in my head, and I started thinking about Mikey. That we don't experience anything the way, or understand anything the way we will when we're back in our eternal minds, because we just, it's like asking your four-year-old to understand, you know, some complex he'll understand it as a grown-up when he's a physicist, but he can't understand it now. So for people listening who are sort of feeling boggled, you'll get it when you're there. But until then, it confuses Cyrus and it confuses me and, frankly, everyone when we really get into this. Because
I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's almost like because my experience is that we don't want to make the mistake of thinking everybody on the astral side is at that level either, because what seems to be going on is that there's these different levels of, like, the quote higher self, and so when you're on the astral earth and we're continuing our individual sort of incarnated existences on that side, you know, everybody may have, like, a multi-tiered, a really, really grandiose higher self that has that kind of cosmic consciousness. But the thing is, I mean, in some ways, kind of lowering yourself into this level or the astral level, it provides opportunities that you might not get if you're just always living on that upper scale of consciousness.
Precisely.
Because you don't, you know, it's like if you're existing only on the macro perspective, then you can't really do all the stuff on the micro perspective. And so from that perspective, literally you want to be back down on this micro level without that full level of consciousness. Because we kind of have this idea in our heads, I kind of blame Eastern religion for this, that it's better the higher the level we get to. But that's not how it works. It's not that it's better or worse. It's that there's things we can't do on that high level that we can do here and vice versa. And that includes Earth, and that includes, like, the astral level. That could include one level above the astral level. So it's almost like, you know, in the background processing, you know, software, we're operating on that grand cosmic scale, but we're not doing that. You know, it would be no point to any of this if that's just the level that we were all on, and none of this mattered, and it was necessary to always be back on that level again, because everything else is inferior, you know, like, you know, because that's the belief system some people have. But it's not like that. It's always going to be this dance between that higher level and in the micro level. And I don't think either one will ever go away. I think it's just the way, you know, just the way that we operate on. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And the people that you meet when you are doing, by the way, everyone's going to wonder, are you flying actually when you're doing this, or do you walk into these areas, or how do you locomote?
You can walk and you can teleport. I mean, if you fly, you'll probably get attention because not everybody really can fly, but some people can.
Bird or a plane? No, it's Cyrus. I love that.
Yeah, I can't. I've never really flown. I mean, usually I'm just walking around. I know about the teleportation stuff, but I'm not usually doing that either, because, you know, in those kind of somewhat rare moments when I have, like, full consciousness, I'm just thinking about, you know, how do I get as much information as possible before I wake up.
I would just like to say, I think you're very brave. I have known other people who could do some of what you do, but they scare themselves. Nothing you do seems to scare you, which to me is really extraordinary. I mean, you talk with some people or meet with some people who are not very savory, and you seem to almost be attracted to that experience.
Okay.
You want to understand.
I remember you mentioned this earlier. I got sidetracked. So, you know, just look, I mean, there's also basically lower realms that are a bit grimier, and then just part of life on the astral earth, right? So there's good neighborhoods and there's bad neighborhoods.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that a lot can be said for having an existence where maybe you're more needed. And sometimes that's going to be like a really, you know, grimy neighborhood or a place that's not so savory. And because sometimes that's where people really need the assistance, maybe even more so than here. I mean, we think of the other side, maybe we make it all idealistic, but we don't sometimes look at how there can be really just like just not very happy, very dull, very drab parts of astral real estate. That, you know, it's far from idealistic. I mean, these are kind of realms that are generated through the kind of collective consciousness of people whose thoughts are on that level and people who are not very happy. And, you know, sometimes they're the ones who need the most help, you know. And so there is that angle to consider. But also sometimes even in this world, I mean, do we always want perfection? And this is a big philosophical concept. I mean, look, I mentioned I'm in a hostel, and you know, there's people who have scribbles on the walls, and it's really kind of funky. But hey, this is how I like to travel. And if you know, if I don't have a huge budget, but like if I did, and I could go stay in some fancy hotel, but that really wouldn't be so interesting, would it? So again, we have a lot of these. No. We have a lot of these like. Ideologies that people attach to. One is that the more perfected something is, the better it is. And I really, you know, I'm in Japan. I love Japan. I love the Japanese people. I took Japanese as my second language in university, but it's the perfect example because the Japanese culture, there is this huge dedication to perfection. So you go into a 7-Eleven here and you buy an egg salad sandwich for $2 and it's like the most gourmet egg salad sandwich you've ever eaten. But, you know, with all the perfection in Japan, like there's this astronomical level of depression and suicide. So it's like even with perfection, that doesn't always speak to what we want. So that's another factor to think about, especially when we think about the kinds of places we want to spend our time. So, you know, it's almost like to me, life is about finding a higher level of consciousness within yourself. But maybe not exactly like living in a perfected environment. It's like just taking that with you, not striving to necessarily be like, I want to live in a realm where it's, you know, it's just rainbows and flowers and, you know, the unicorns and the air smells like cotton candy or tastes like, you know, whatever yeah. It is. I mean, to me, that might speak to some people, you know, and that's great for them. But, you know, I mean, if you could put me in like a grungy rock and roll bar in Astral Los Angeles, I'm going to be a lot more happy.
Because you're very young. I think I'll take the puppies and the unicorns.
Yeah, but even when I'm, you know, even when I'm older, maybe I'm going to still be interested in places where I can be of more service to others, it's not as, you know, that's just my feeling. I mean, you know, I think I'm young at heart. I've probably had a bazillion, you know, past lives or, you know, extraterrestrial lives or whatever. But you know, I can see anyone can connect to the kind of the spirit of whatever we want, but what the abstract concept known as youth, which, you know, it is quite, you know, an abstract thing. I mean, on the astral side, you can learn to be any age you want. So,
yes,
I mean, you can be in the younger person subculture and you died when you were 95.
Right.
Or I've seen places on the astral side where it's a freaking like retirement community. And you have these,
really?
You know, I saw like 12 ladies lined up playing bingo and, you know, they'd all passed away probably in their respective retirement home and they have no interest in trying to become young again or any of that, you know? So it's just, you know, we forge the path we want to be on.
I took a few notes about your mother, who's been there for how many years now?
Two, I guess, or two and a half.
Okay, so not very long, but she died. She was kind of a troubled person, and she's been getting counseling and help there, you say? And she seems better now. I think that's a striking thing for people to understand. We don't become perfect when we get there, but there is tremendous help for us, and your mother is getting it, and apparently it's helping her.
Yeah, no, it's true. But I think, I mean, I don't think she's still taking therapy. I mean, she was for a while. I was participating in some of that. I've been with her and doctors on that side quite a few times. Oh, yeah. Even had one of the doctors, when I was had a reading with Suzanne Wilson, like even one of the doctors I'd been talking to came through Suzanne Wilson, and nobody else even knew that I was having those experiences.
Wow.
No, I mean, yeah, of course. But I mean, I don't think that she's still doing that. I mean, no one's perfect. I think that she still has ways that she should be ironing herself out, but she is a very spontaneous personality, and sometimes it manifests in very positive ways, sometimes in kind of negative ways. But I mean, I think she's fine. I'm not too worried about her. But we definitely don't arrive perfect. I mean, it can happen. I mean, somebody could be like this really old soul who's like this master teacher, and then they die. And then they wake up there and they have like full memory of, you know, all their, you know, 2000 past lives, and, you know, they're just immediately in a robe floating around or whatever it is.
Exception to the rule. Yes.
Yeah. That's probably, you know, maybe 2 out of 10 people are that way, and 8 out of 10 arrive and they're just as messed up as they were before they died. And that's the majority. So we have to keep that in mind. And, you know, as we, you know, but there's a lot of other complicated issues. Look, the afterlife topics and metaphysics, it's a big community now on Facebook. We have YouTube channel as well. But you know, we have one person named, Michelle Pennick, who posts there, and she's a medium, and she said, yeah, it is true. We are very similar when we cross over, but there are certain, you know, mental functions that are a little bit different. So like, you know, basically she says the limbic system of the brain is a lot less active.
Yes.
And so if we are, you know, basically like, let's say there's like a kind of id level psychosis happening, or a chemical depression that's happening, like a lot of that stuff naturally goes away. But if it's a deep level psychological condition, it doesn't go away. But that right away means that we are cured of a majority of like physical based illnesses, especially if that's a chemical related depression or any kind of chemical related issue that is affecting us. But if it's a true psychological issue, something that you're in control of, then I'm afraid you're not getting out of that just from dying. This is something that you probably need to work out here, or else, and you need to work it out eventually, no matter where you are.
Now, one of the things that blew my mind, your father grew a lot in this realm, became to understand a lot more shortly before his death, and he visited your mother out of body, and he was given a phone number. He came back into body, he dialed the phone number, and he talked to your mother on the phone for several minutes.
Yep, this is
that
a story.
That really happened?
I don't know if it really happened. It's just something my father told me.
Wow.
So this is the kind of thing I say, like, look, if you follow this field, you know, study the objective evidence. There's a lot of that. This is what we call like subjective, anecdotal, for some people, nonsense. But it's important, I think, for some of us who kind of are trying to, you know, look at different concepts. So, like, this is something my father told me. And my father spent his whole life just lying constantly. But I knew – but here's the thing. I've always known when he's lying and when he's not lying. And, you know, when he told me this story, he was not lying about it.
Oh,
And it batched up with other experiments, developments happening technologically on that side right now.
Yes.
As I mentioned, I run this community where I run it with other people as well, of course. But you know, we receive so many stories of people getting phone calls from deceased people.
Yes.
So basically, he had some kind of astral experience, and they were like, "We're going to give you a special phone number," and it was my mom and like a higher level kind of person. And it's like, oh, keep this secret, and this is a phone number. When you wake up, remember the number, call the number. And so he said he called and then talked to my mom. And then,
wow.
you know, sometime later, we said that my mom materialized in the house and, like, physically, this is like an out-of-body thing, and just walked up to him, and they, like, held hands and spoke for, like, 5 minutes, and then she disappeared.
Yes.
And then in that whole mess, like, I was trying to get my dad off the liquor, and this is what eventually killed him also. And I was quite angry with him because, you know, he was drinking and drinking still. And, you know, he was so close to, like, me being able to go move in with him and, like, kind of look out for him and continue. I could continue to have a life here with him. But, you know, I'm talking to my mom, who's deceased, and others, and, you know, my grandma, who's deceased, of course. Like, you know, we're all concerned about my father, and we're all making an effort to reach out to him. And so that's why he was getting so much contact. But I also apparently contacted him and, like, partially materialized in the house with him astrally. So, like, I'm asleep here, and I'm having my parallel astral life there, which I only have, like, limited memory of. And then I came and contacted him, like popping into the house as well. So, like, you know, so we can be operating on that side while living a life here and our bodies here. So that's wow. Another big point people need to realize is that, so you can be on that side living there, and then you can be on this side living a life here. And astral projection is just the ability to link your synchronize your consciousness here to your consciousness there. So a lot of the time, it's not like you're going out of your body and then, you know, going off to explore. Sometimes you're already having an experience on that side. Astral projection is just synchronizing your consciousness from here and there. So you could be literally, you could have somebody who's living here could, like, be a spirit communicator for somebody who's also living here, maybe while they're asleep and living that second astral parallel life. So that's something else for people to chew on.
Yes, you've given us a lot to chew on. We've come to the end of our time, but now you have something called Afterlife Topics Facebook group, right? And people could join that?
Yeah, I definitely recommend, if you like what I have to say, I would recommend, if you want to hear, like, tons of lectures and stuff I talk about, go on YouTube, put in Afterlife Topics and Metaphysics, and if you subscribe to the channel, that'll really help me too. We're trying to lift off the Facebook group is the same thing, Afterlife Topics and Metaphysics. The official webpage is afterlifetopics.com, and on the afterlifetopics.com you have my books. If you want to get involved with classes, we do classes twice a week, as well as I'll do like personal one-on-one, like, consultations with people who have, like, specific questions. And that's $30 a month. Basically, it's patrons of the channel who want to support the work I do and help me being able to feed myself while I live out of a backpack.
We'll put all of this in the description so everyone will know how to reach Cyrus. And we'll have you back again, too, because we have a whole lot more. We've hardly touched on what's in your book. It's really quite amazing, I think. I very much recommend it. But meanwhile, consider yourself hugged, dear, and enjoy Japan, where you're just starting your day.
Thanks, Roberta. Now I'm going to go to sleep. I've actually been awake all night, so I'm actually going to go to sleep until about 2 p.m., and then in a few days, I'm going to Vietnam, so it's time to pack up pretty soon and head to the next destination. But nice to talk to you. I'm glad we were able to do this.
I'm so glad we were, and we will do this again. And everyone, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I'm really glad you could be with us. Don't you love Cyrus? Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, and you never will end. When you really get what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, here for the 25th time in Seek Reality, 6 years on air, will be the world's leading expert on the afterlife and the greater reality, my precious friend, Dr. R. Craig Hogan. For both of us, our afterlife studies and our efforts to understand the greater reality in which everything happens, and now you had a taste of what that really means, have led us to the fact that what we experience in a limited way is human consciousness is literally all that exists. We're going to be talking next week about what that means and how the fact that consciousness is the basis of reality can be used to quite literally transform the world for the better. If you want to make the world a better place, a happier, more peaceful place, if you want to heal the world, please join us next week. We're going to talk about how you and I can begin the process of actually getting that done. And of course, this week we've been talking with Cyrus Kirkpatrick. I'm going to leave you all of this information in the description of this program, because I think it's important you be able to get in touch with him. His book is The Afterlife and Beyond, An Examination of Life After Death by an Out-of-Body Explorer. And I recommend it without reservation. It is a wonderful book. I've never read anything quite like it. He's so thorough in the things he researches, and nothing about it is anything other than frank and honest and true. Past episodes of Seek Reality, of course, are available on webtalkradio.net and a whole host of other places, including the wonderful Dream Vision 7 radio family, and on the Seek Reality app that you can get for free in the iTunes App Store. So if you ever lose track of where we are, you just go to robertagrimes.com and click on the radio tab. And if you like these weekly conversations, you might want to check out my blog at robertagrimes.com. I work out a lot of the things we talk about here on that blog, and more people are telling me that it's one of the high points of their week each Sunday morning that they read my blog, and then sometimes they comment, and it's become a nice big family. So join us if you'd like to. But meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and please make the most of this coming week in our one gigantic reality, knowing that you in particular are a powerful, eternal being, and you, more than anybody else in all the universes that ever existed, you in particular are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.